Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get into today's amazing guest, me, we are going to draw your attention to my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And you can find out about the movie premiere that's coming soon, September 23rd in Sun Valley, Idaho. The NFL has been fiercely putting together this amazing, epic journey that took me up and down Mount Everest safely. It's going to be amazing. I haven't seen it, of course, but that's when it's going to go down in more details where the public can view it on my website. I continue to support and raise money for Higher Ground. Of course, Amelia's Everest. We've been at this now for quite some time. My daughter Amelia is getting better, and we keep raising more and more money. And that's the key thing. So Higher Ground, it's all there on the philanthropy tab. And finally, you can find more podcasts just like this one with just incredible people doing amazing stuff here. And always love to have a ratings and a review of the show. Okay, so we decided that turn the tables a little bit. This is a little bit unique for me in the standpoint of I've got a good buddy, John Wechter, who was on the podcast about 4 months ago. He did an outstanding job. And the thing that he and I have in common is not only do we have places here in Sun Valley, Idaho, but we are also in the club of having climbed the seven summits. We actually were exactly 20 years apart of climbing Mount Everest. He did it 20 years ago. And of course, I just recently came off the mountain. So I am going to relinquish all control of this podcast, and John Wechter is now taking over. So John, you have the floor.
Thank you, MP.
Yes.
I'm honored and pleased to be the first guest host of Finding Your Summit.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's get going. MP, first of all, you and I did the podcast when I was in your chair and you're in mine, and you were getting ready to go to Everest, and you left the house after we did it, and that was the last time I was going to see you until you returned safely.
Yep.
There's always risk. Yep. You know all about it. We're going to talk about it tonight a little bit, what you went through. But I'd said to you, I look forward to you returning. Stay healthy. Stay strong. Keep your attitude. And you did all those things, and you returned. And I said, and when you return, I want to be the first guest host of Finding Your Summit. So we're here. So congratulations, and thank God you made it, and,
yeah,
and you're safe, and you're looking healthy again. I can tell everybody out there on the podcast, he's back looking very strong. You don't return there without losing some weight and going through some reentry conditioning, and you've done well with both. So
well, certainly drinking a Coors Light, you know, sitting next across the table from you, it certainly doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to pretend that the audience doesn't necessarily know a lot about you, and I listened to your podcast, which was a solo cast that aired on July 16th, and many of you listened to that. It was really great, and what it was really a solo cast early upon Mark's return from Mount Everest, and just really going through in a kind of a chronological order what you went through, you know, the highs, the lows. And you even said you might have had some PTSD when you got back.
For
and
sure.
So, and I want to talk about that. And maybe I just want to talk about that right from the beginning. Here we are sitting here. You have a Coors Light. You look great.
Yeah.
Since July 16th, a month later or so, how are you feeling?
I feel for the most part pretty good. You know, I came back and there's two things I didn't talk about. You know, one is that I had fallen backwards off a ladder in the Kumba ice fall, and it was about a 12-foot fall. I fell back and I ripped my back, and it happened to move my alignment around just a little bit from the standpoint of my sciatic nerve going down. So I've had some numbness in my lower leg. And that is slowly getting better. So that's, I'm very fortunate because, you know, you always get worried when you have back issues. And then the other thing is I was coming back off a rotation, coming back onto our camp in the Kumba. I was actually at Camp 1, and I was on the side of this hill. And as you know, it's a lot of rock, a lot of mud, especially later in the day when things melt. And the whole kind of part of the hillside gave way. And I'd never really done this before because I'm always pretty good on my feet. But my feet didn't move and my knee popped, and that wasn't a good thing. And so it hurt. But in terms of going literally forward and backward, no problem, going lateral, there's been some issues and there still continues to be some swelling. I had a doctor look at it and it's just a stretched ligament, but not a blown out MCL. So, you know, at the end of the day, all these things will heal in time, but I'm getting there.
Good. You know, when you're there working the mountain, you know, and when Mark talks about a rotation, as you guys have learned through his solo cast and other great mountaineers like Ed Beasters that have spoken on this, climbing an 8,000 meter peak, you climb it about four or five times, mm-hmm. up and down. So a rotation, he's going up and down the mountain and going through some of these things. You're back now and back to reentry. I remember when I returned, crosswalks kind of freaked me out, you know, cars and stoplights. You didn't see any of that for 2 months.
Yeah.
Right. How are you adjusting to normal life? You were just in LA for the day. You're back into the MP, you know, life. How's that going?
Yeah, well, it's going fine. And kind of to your point, you know, you go from 0 to 100 pretty quickly. And in my case, so if I go back and I think about when I came off the mountain, and I think a lot of that solo cast was just my experience being on the mountain and being snowblind and coming down and running out of oxygen and all those things. But I really didn't talk about what happened when we got down to camp one. And that was essentially, from my standpoint, I rolled into camp one about 6 o'clock in the morning. We left camp two at 4 a.m. I happened to be with Garrett Madison, our fearless leader. And as we came into camp, the skies parted and it became very clear. And we'd been kind of bouncing in and out of a cyclone up there. So the weather was really wonky. And as we came in, I grabbed Garrett and I said, "Garrett, get me a helicopter. I want the hell out of here." And so we were able to fly a helicopter up over the ice fall, pick us up, go down, and then take another one from there to Kathmandu. And so it's just such an out-of-body experience to go from that extreme. You're just on the top of the world. You and I happened to stand on the top of the world 20 years apart, but we were literally both the last guys on the mountain at that particular time. And 24 hours later, I'm in an absolute shit show in Kathmandu. There's no rules. There's dogs crossing the street, right? There's people laying dead in the street. I mean, it's crazy. And so that was the thing that I had the hardest adjustment. And then just when I got to the hotel and just having the fine dining of essential foods, just a hamburger or some ice cream or just the finer things in life, a beer, you know, those things are just savoring it. Just those are, I was almost like fantasizing about those things in my tent for over those 2 months because I was so deprived from those.
I get it. And the adjustment takes a while. And what I'll say to you, and then I'm going to totally change the tact of our chat today. What I'll say to you is the adjustment becomes more and more positive and it will never go away. Hmm. My greatest takeaway from climbing Mount Everest in particular in the Seven Summits was there's never been a day that has gone by that in some way it didn't touch me. Someone didn't ask about it or I didn't think about it. So it's with you, my friend. And I hope that it goes from, you know, shocking and difficult, and I can see it is, to a really nice memory that will support you the rest of your life.
You know, something on that too is I've always had such mad respect. Like I even have more of a respect. You know, a lot of my career was in football going back, and I thrived in that particular sport, you know, all the way to the top. And even though I got to play with Hall of Famers, you know, Marcus Allen's and all these other guys, and I had mad respect for those guys, I always had a different level when we're talking about guys who not only have done the Seven Summits, but in particular Mount Everest. And so I can remember the first time I think we came together, we met, it was at Seattle Golf Club and we were doing a round together and we were walking down the 15th or something. We were talking about Mount Everest. I was just so in awe in what you had done. And then I got to meet some of these other guys, Ed Beasters, you know, people who had actually gone up and down this, Peter Whitaker, you know, and now a lot of these people like you have become friends. And so for me to be in that group, it's just kind of an out of body experience because I don't look at myself like that, but I still in awe of those guys who have actually gone through that pain that I recently, you know, experienced.
Well, yeah. And common experiences bring us together. And when you and I look at each other, we know.
Yeah.
And same with those other guys. I want to leave the mountain. I want to talk about, well, we're not going to leave the mountain completely, but I want to talk about four things while we have some time together.
Yeah.
I want to talk about football.
Okay.
I want to talk about family. I want to talk about climbing. And I want to talk about what's happening next.
All right.
Your next summit. So let's do it. That's where I want to hit it.
Okay.
So let's just get off the mountain and go way back. You were a great football player, as evidenced by what you accomplished. But let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. Roosevelt,
yeah.
High School, Seattle, yeah. Washington. You were taking passes from your good friend, Hugh Millen.
Actually not. That was an interesting story because a lot of people associate us in that way. And there was another guy that was a year ahead of me. His name was Kevin Reimer. And he kind of really tore it up in that whole northwest part of Seattle. And so as a sophomore, I came in, and junior, he really broke out, and I got to start as a sophomore on the varsity team. And we did some good things, but nothing outstanding. We had some really good players on the team. And then he moves to a senior. And then that's where I kind of had my breakout, and we were just going crazy, you know, and after that, recruiters from all over the country were coming in, but it was really him. And then the following year, Hugh Millen, who would later go on and be my quarterback at the University of Washington, and had a beautiful 10-year NFL career, strong, sturdy, smart, all those things. He literally could not take a 5-step drop, which is the equivalent of a 12-yard route. So that's maybe a second for me to run down and take a left or a right. And he could not drop back without being sacked. And so what they ended up doing is pulling me in from quarterback from wide receiver to quarterback. And so out of that experience, you know, it was fun for me that year to play that position. And then I got recruited all over the country as both a quarterback or a wide receiver. So like the Oregon schools wanted me as quarterback. The Washington schools wanted me as a receiver.
Okay. So you decided to stay as a wide receiver, as evidenced by the fact you went to UW.
Yep.
Tell me about Don James, legendary football coach for the Huskies.
Yeah.
And not just the wins and the losses, but what he meant to you as far as laying a foundation that you have told me, and I want you to share, really laid the groundwork for you becoming, you know, the person that you are and a person that can achieve great things.
Well, it was interesting going back just a sec. I actually wanted to be a quarterback at the University of Washington.
No, that wasn't on the table. Yeah,
I know that wasn't, but that's what I wanted to be. But I went for the program, mm-hmm. and not necessarily where I could have played early on and what was best for Mark. And for example, I was offered a scholarship by University of California, and I'm certain I would have played as a freshman. But in the interest of like what my long-term development, you know, became, what Don James taught me was about discipline, about going after goals, about pursuing your dreams, about giving it your all. And those things were put into this blueprint called the Pyramid of Success. And so for me, that was, I've talked about this number of times on my podcast, and that really meant, because I had no clue what it meant to really work. I was able to literally roll out of my bed in high school and pretty much dominate. And that all changed when I was a freshman. I was 181 pounds. I was 6'2", and I just couldn't compete at that level. I didn't have the body to play in the Pac-10 in those days. Now it's the Pac-12.
Right.
And so it took me years and years and years. And the whole thing that, I've always, this has stuck with me more than anything, is that he gave me the blueprint. If you do, you know, all these 25 individual and team goals, that at the end of all that, there's no certainty that X is going to equal Y. There's no certainty that just because I do all those things and I get bigger and stronger that I'm going to play on the field. But it puts you in the best possible position for those things to happen. And then magically, there's a game in Husky Stadium against Michigan. And, you know, I get the call and I'm playing. It's my first exposure. And we get down in the final seconds and we're down and I catch a last second touchdown. And from there, it just kept going. And so it's that confidence that it breeds. And it really teaches you to go after things in the right way. And it's not that, you know, just because I didn't get my shot right out of the gate, right when I get there, I'm going to transfer. I had to like stick it out. And there was a lot of dark days for me out there.
Hmm. Okay. Do you think about Coach James? Have you thought about him in the past, you know, 35 years since you played for him?
Yeah, I really do, because that blueprint and at the very top of that pyramid is
What's the nugget? Give us
the nugget. Is competitive greatness, right? And that's what we all try to achieve in business, right? And in sport, in life. And if you want to be the best that you want to be, for me at least, it is you better love the process, because there's going to be a lot of pain, and in a lot of cases there's no gain, and there's going to be all kinds of obstacles which you have to take detours, but you can't take your eye off the ball, right? But if you love the thing, if no matter what, you know, you're going to be tenacious about, I'm going after that mountain and I'm going to go after that business opportunity, or if I'm going to go after the football, I'm going to be the starter no matter what, you're going to figure it out, even though when the odds look squarely against you, you know, you can potentially get to that end, but you got to love the process and know that, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to work out the way it should be.
Well, it clearly worked, because it's 6'2", 181 freshman. Great catch against Michigan in the end zone. I was at that game, and I loved you before I knew you, because I was really, I was and am a fan. So that process not only worked for your endeavors as a wide receiver at the University of Washington, but it would serve you well and has served you well through life. But talk about the transition, because I want to talk about pro football now, because that's a big deal of why we're here. You know, you were a pro football player. You took on mountaineering, climbed the seven summits and Mount Everest included. The transition again, right? You woke up at Roosevelt High, you could dominate.
Yeah.
You got to UW and you got hit in the face.
Yeah.
What happened in the pro? You were drafted.
Yeah.
So you're on the map.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a great wide receiver. What happened? You were drafted by the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah.
Tell us about your professional experience.
Yeah. I mean, it was an amazing time. And it's interesting that as we speak today, things have really come full circle, which I'll discuss in a minute. But, you know, when you just don't show up, I think a lot of people, you know, they're not quite sure or understand how that process works. And so, you know, to kind of get on that target list for the NFL teams, for the most part, you have to start by being invited to the combines. And so today they're in Indianapolis, and it's where the top 336 players are invited to go. And you go through all kind of agility drills and catching or passing, whatever your position is. And then there's always the physical part. And so a lot of that you're evaluated, and based on that, you're given a slot. And so I was given a slot of, I'd be drafted between the fifth round or the seventh round. And I think the biggest mistake that I see with so many guys is that they hear a number and then they expect to be in the first or second or whatever round that they are projected at. And then that round doesn't happen. And then everything is a disaster. And I had always been and come from humble roots. My parents, both school teachers, and they were always like, you know, just be grateful for what you get and don't expect anything, right? And so I went into it with that kind of mentality, that mindset. And so when I got picked, not only was it that I got picked, so that was over the moon about that, but there's the 32 teams basically represent 32 different cities, with the exception of LA back in the day, because there was two teams there, right? But you could end up in Buffalo as much as you could end up in Green Bay. So as a wide receiver catching the ball, there's places that are warm climates that are more favorable. And having grown up in Seattle, where it rains a lot, you know, I was really excited to be down in LA and be with that team, because 2 years before they'd been in the Super Bowl. And here I come walking into to my first day at camp, and I've got, you know, in the huddle, Jim Plunkett is calling the signals, and Marcus Allen's a running back, and Cliff Branch is my other receiver, and Todd Christensen is the tight end. All these famous linemen, and Plunkett calls a call, and he goes, ready, break. We all go to the line of scrimmage, and who's out there stalking me back and forth, and back and forth is Lester Hayes with all the stickum on his hands. And then I look into the interior of the line, there's Howie Long and Lyle Alzado and Matt Millen and Rod Martin and the other cornerbacks, Mike Hayes, all pro, and there's Van McElroy. And I'm thinking, like, is Plunkett is calling the signals, I'm thinking in my head, literally, as I'm looking back, like, if I were to die today, this is what heaven would be like.
You didn't die. Did you catch a pass against those guys?
I did. And, you know, so back to your question, the NFL was a struggle, but I just kept fighting and fighting and fighting and never gave up and never threw in the towel when things were at odds. My first year, I actually ended up on injured reserve, and it was a way, not too many people know this, but we were stacked at wide receiver. And so Al Davis had come up to me and said, Mark, I want you to take a fall. And so I was really conflicted, because I don't lie and I don't like to fake things. And so he said, you want to make this team? You want to get a paycheck? You take a fall. And so I went to my parents and I asked them, I'm not comfortable with this. And, you know, but then my dad said, you know, I totally get where you're at. And I totally support you, whatever you decide to do. So I took a fall. Okay. And I ended up with the team the entire year getting paid. And then the next year was a little bit turbulent. I was cut. I was brought back. I played for the Rams for a little bit. I came back. It was on the team again. So I go into my third year and I make the team. And I was just like, oh my God, this has been such a roller coaster. But I've been with these guys this whole time. And then 2 days before the first game, I get cut. Actually, I don't get cut. I get traded to the New Orleans Saints. And then I'm down there for a couple of years. So, I mean, I just like I had everything kind of hit you, but it was just like, what is the ultimate goal, even though these detours keep coming in front of you?
That's great. Well, and it really is being a team player and really a tribute to you when the owner, and I know he was the general manager and very involved, but clearly had a lot of respect and love for you to want to keep you around. Yeah. And you were around the NFL for 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's above even today's average. So that's a big accomplishment.
Well, I'm really proud of that for on a couple of different levels because, number one, just financially, if you can make it past 3 years, actually it used to be 2 years, now it's 3 years. Actually, it used to be 4 years, and they just layered it 3 years. Then you get to be in part of the players' union, right, the NFLPA, and then there's money that comes with that and benefits and health and things like that. So that's been a wonderful thing. And then the irony of everything is because of my climbing, it's kind of made my whole NFL days relevant again. And when I was just at the Raider reunion recently, and those guys treated me like I was an all-pro, you know, for what I had accomplished on Mount Everest. It was amazing.
Right. And I was just going to ask you about that reunion. You told me about it. They have a beautiful new stadium in Las Vegas for their Raiders. Mm-hmm. And you were invited and part of that. You had some great pictures. And, you know, that's why the discussion and so fun to talk to you having that NFL experience and what I told you about your Everest experience. It was a long time ago since you played for the Raiders
yeah.
in professional football.
Yeah.
But you were just invited to that opening of the stadium or that reunion.
It was an opening and a reunion.
Opening and a reunion.
Yeah.
And like Everest and your accomplishment there, these parts of your life will never go away. And well, they'll continue to grow in value.
Yeah, look, and this is truthful. I mean, we all love the movie Forrest Gump. And in the movie Forrest Gump, right, he has about 18 different lives and it's a box of chocolates and all that stuff, right? And I'm over there and there's 102 bricks that they have laid down in front of Allegiant Stadium. And who's got one of the bricks is me. And, you know, I was never on the level of so many of those Freddie Biletnikoff, you know, Stabler, all the NFL greats that were out there. But the NFL and the Las Vegas Raiders, they threw money towards the philanthropy, Higher Ground, Amelia's Everest, that we were raising money for. They sent me flags. They sent me banners. They sent me paraphernalia. They sent me all kinds of stuff. They had people do shout outs, and then they gave me a brick. I mean, like, I don't deserve a brick, but I'm there. I'm like, you know what? This is amazing.
They know everyone that deserves a brick, and yeah. You deserve a brick.
Yeah.
And I want to leave it there because that's a great end of our discussion on football, because what I wanted to point out is your journey wasn't just a 5 year journey in a uniform. Okay. It's been a lifetime in an association, and you've brought them a lot of value by bringing some things that we're going to talk about next, because I want to get to family, but also I'm going to throw out a couple things that I'd like to hear about. And I think the listeners would like to hear about. So I'm going to family and I'm going to life after football. There was, if I'm guessing, you were about 27 or 28 when you finished playing in the NFL, and you're 57, 58 when you probably early 50s when you started climbing. Mid, okay. So we're talking 30 years, in a gap of those two accomplishments that we're kind of bookending this discussion around. So what's going on in between? And I want to learn, I want your listeners to learn more about you. Family. First, I'm not going to bring up names.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Circle P, 16 Mile.
Yeah.
What's that mean to you?
Yeah, amazing, amazing memories. You know, this is a place in Montana that there's not too many places or things that you do in your life where you have a vision. And the vision that I had was to create a magical place in Montana. And we were very blessed and fortunate to have some land out there, and it was absolutely raw. And I was out there with a well-witcher. And this was like a religious experience. And this guy was about 90 years old. He had a big 10-gallon hat on. His shirt was buttoned all the way up to his neck. His sleeves were rolled all the way down. And he walked around that field, which later became the cabins, and he told me exactly where the water was going to be, and I didn't believe him. And so he handed me the tongs. He came behind me, and he went and had me put these tongs over where these marks were, and it felt like a 10-pound shark, you know, on the other end of that. It was an amazing experience. But ultimately, we had scores of friends that came out there like yourself. We had a guys trip every year, and just the camaraderie and the fishing and the stories and the wild horses running around and the rattlesnakes out there and the golfing. And, you know, just like that is what life is about. When you're just, it was the place, yes, that was magical, but it was coming to a unique spot where there was nothing to entertain us but ourselves. And we did a heck of a job of it.
It's a beautiful place and very representative of what's important to you. Having your friends there and beautiful country, and it was really great. Let's get into your daughters, Amelia and Claudette.
Yeah.
And before it was your Everest, it was Amelia's Everest. Yeah. And it continues to be Amelia's Everest. And yeah. I know that Amelia and Claudette worked together on her challenges and the effort for, you know, raising money for the Epilepsy Foundation through Higher Ground. Tell me how that's going and kind of a update.
Well, it's been a challenge, you know, over the years. My daughter now, Amelia, is 22, and at the time she was 8 when we found out she had epilepsy, and so we've tried everything. And at the end of the day, I think through maturity, through empowerment, through the right kind of medicine, there's a variety of things in that jar that have created the last 7 months for her of being seizure-free. It's really a miracle. And so I think there's two perspectives. It's one, what Amelia's had to go through, and she really inspired me, especially on Summit Day when I was running through all kinds of issues. And then what it's like to be the sister of somebody who gets a lot of attention because of the amount of time that we had to spend in the hospitals and the extra care and all these different things that we've done. I mean, literally tried everything. And so Claudette is my older daughter, and she's just been a rock star. And I think where she really turned is when Amelia had a seizure at their mom's house in Santa Monica, and she literally dropped into Claudette's arms, and 911 was called. And just like it happened to me a year earlier in Manhattan Beach, literally you think your kid's going to die on the spot. And when you are face-to-face with somebody you love, it just changes your whole perspective about life and being fragile and what's important and those things.
So true. And I'm as you said, 7 months, seizure-free.
Yeah.
So doing well.
Doing great.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So as I said, now I want to talk about Higher Ground, you know, because that all feeds into that. But yeah. I want to end with that in next category. Let's go back to climbing, but kind of at my altitude here. But let's go up to 30,000 feet,
sure,
or 32 feet. When was it? I'm talking about that gap between football and climbing.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? You know, well, I know how I got started. How'd you get started?
Let's talk about vision. Yeah,
here.
I mean, I think there was a couple things that were going on. The first thing is, like you said, when everything ended abruptly, it was 28 years old, and I had originally thought I was going to play 10 years, and then some, you know, things happen, and now it's 5 years instead of 10, and now what do you do? And when somebody has been doing the same thing over and over and over, and really it was 10 years if you throw in college football because it was such an intense program and we did so well, and that was so much of my focus that when I came out of that, it was just like, where do I put all this energy now? And I knew I wanted to do something great, but I didn't want to go work for somebody, but I didn't have any skills really to go apply to that would be marketable, you know, in the sense. And ultimately, I'd started this marketing company. This took me a couple of years, and there was a friend of a friend type of thing. And the way these things a lot of times hit, and I had some early success. And so I really started to understand and learn and cut my chops on just business 101. And as an independent owner, you know, you're the janitor and the president all at the same time. And so I had to learn a lot of these different skill sets, which, you know, I look back on it and it was a good learning experience. And then along the way, a couple cool things happened. One, I started a venture-backed company, Front Porch Classics. It was a gaming company. And we ultimately ended up in 700 different countries, 7 countries, 700 locations. We're in all the retail shops and we were kind of the darling. You know, we won Toy of the Year in 2001, 2002, competing against Mattel and Hasbro. And so it was just, again, it was learning how to play with the sharks. And, you know, and at the end of the day, we didn't really make any money, even though we sold the company. But that's all part of dealing with venture capital, you know, people in some cases.
Back to the sharks.
After the sharks, right? And so learning preferences and shares and all that stuff. And but it really prepared me for the future. And so, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, I really saw the future of digital coming and started a transition in terms of getting myself more immersed into going to my little friend called Google and typing in everything I ever want to know about e-commerce stores and how it worked and what these different terms meant. And ultimately, it led to being a part of a company called Maven, which is a technology company that we started 5 years ago. And we have 300 plus brands, but the brand I spend all my time at is Sports Illustrated. It's one of the brands we took over and we're uplisting to NASDAQ and it's pretty exciting times and we're having a lot of success right now. And it's just been great to kind of be in the right place at the right time. But again, it wasn't all roses, rainbows and butterflies, you know, from day one. It took me years to learn all these different terms and what they meant and how it works and all this stuff. And of course it's it continues to change all the time. Right. So it's been a wonderful road.
Right. You know, it's interesting and I'm glad you touched on those things because, you know, kind of your intro of how I would introduce you, you know, the former NFL player, we've touched on that. Entrepreneur, you weren't going to be the person that went to work for someone in an office. You figured it out.
Yeah.
Just like you did, you know, to play football at the level you did. And then we have philanthropist and we're going to hit that because I want to talk about higher ground, but I want to stick on Mountaineer.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to, like, the through line for all this stuff too is going back to business and football and mountaineering and anything else that I've done. And that is, and I've said this before, but success leaves clues. And so by me being able to watch you or talk to you about what I'm in for before we left, we had that conversation to be able to climb and talk to Ed Visters, you know, in the way that I did, to go on YouTube and see every single Everest video that was ever produced, you know, of people succeeding and dying and everything and what to expect and what not to. And in business, right, you know, connecting with a lot of people in the business community, a lot of them were YPO people around town that I would go and I sit and I talk and ask a lot of questions to, probably bug the hell out of them, but just trying to learn constantly. And back to football, you know, I was so blessed to have Steve Largent come by, another all pro, you know, when I was in college and seeing these different guys that would come through and like, what are they doing? How can I learn? And how can I be more crafty? And how, what's your point of difference?
Right. So with all of that, You were busy after being an NFL player, building your own businesses, learning along the way. But it seems to me, or I would ask, and I actually know this because we talked about it, but how did your need, your desire for that next challenge, how did you focus on mountaineering? How'd the seven summits become, hey, that's my goal. It's going to take some discipline. It's going to take some years. Mm-hmm. How did that, beyond your entrepreneurial business activities, how did that become the next thing?
Yeah, well, that really came out of a case of desperation, I think, more than anything. And, you know, I was married for a long time and that was falling apart. And, you know, I think one of the things that I've found over time, 59 years old now, it's amazing to see those numbers.
Me too.
Yeah. But the reality is, that's the reality. And the one thing I've learned about myself is probably my greatest strength is I never give up. My greatest weakness is I never give up. And those can be detrimental in both directions. I'm wanting to give up on a business or a relationship. And, you know, in the case of how I got into this. You know, I was kind of at that end point that I didn't want to give up on this marriage, but at the end of the day, it just wasn't working. And my ex is a wonderful person and we get along great now, but you know, it took me years to kind of get through that. And finally I was walking my old chocolate lab Theo around the block and it was like a lightning bolt hit me. And I had to change my mindset from how did I get here? Which I kept saying over and over and over, like, this is impossible. There's no way that this was, I was the last guy that was ever signed up to get divorced. First guy in my entire family unit in the history of our family. And that was a hard pill to suck down. And so finally I came up with this whole thing. And it's just like, I've got to find a big ass goal called a BHAG, right? Big, hairy, audacious goal to pull myself out of it, because just me walking up and down and working down the Stairmaster isn't working. And I've got to do something radical. And so being from the great state of Washington, and I'd climbed Rainier by this time, and all the smaller peaks around the state of Washington and some in California, I'd been up Mount Whitney. It was just like, you know what, I'm going to go up to the seven summits. And I've always had, going back to where we started with, mad respect for guys like you who've done it. And like, why not me? Why can't I do that? Why can't I be that person that accomplishes that? And at that time too, there was no NFL player who'd ever done it. And so I said, I'm going to become the first NFL player to accomplish this and go after it. And that's what helped emerge me out and also give me some healing while being in nature and just having butterflies and bees and, you know, birds come by. And it's just that calming of just slowing everything down.
That's great. I talked with you throughout your journey. You know, after you go to Denali, you go to Elbrus, you go to Vinson. And quite frankly, you're a great athlete. You take this very seriously and you're always super fit. And quite frankly, you never had any trouble. Correct me if I'm wrong, with any of those mountains, you know, the first six, and you did other mountains too. Mm-hmm. I remember you getting mad. You were telling me one time you went on a guided trip up, kind of a celebrity deal up Rainier, and they were so slow, you know, you basically are cold and bored and, let's go.
Yeah.
So I also remember talking to you shortly before you left for Everest. Mm. And I got a kick out of it because I knew how the conversation would go. Mm. I would say, you know, MP, where you're going is different. It's a different place, Everest. It's like a different game. Not just the pros and Roosevelt, but maybe a different sport.
Yeah.
It's so big and a different challenge. So everything you've done to date almost doesn't count. And you need to get locked in. You need to learn on the fly a new game. Mm. And what I enjoyed was your eyes looked at me like you're looking at me now. And what your mouth said was, thanks, Johnny. Thanks for the advice. Yeah. What your eyes told me, yeah, dude, that doesn't apply to me. Eyes told me this is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Tell me again, kind of from your heart, not the technical, not this ladder, not falling down. Those are important. But when you got there and through your journey, what was different than anything you've done before?
Well, I'll use your words. Everything was different. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of comparisons I've heard with others comparing Denali with Everest. And it, to me, was exponentially completely different. There's no ice fall. That's a moving glacier of 30 to 50 foot ice columns that are collapsing all the time. Every single time you go through, as you know, it's a different route. It's treacherous. Avalanches come down. That was daily. The ice walls having to climb up over. I mean, there's one, as you know, in Vinson, that's about 1,100 feet. There's a long ice slope on Denali, about 900 feet. But just when you're going, literally straight up these things, not like at a 50 degree angle or 45 or whatever they, right? It's just literally straight up and in some case inverted. And then, you know, the altitude at the top and the amount of days that you go and you're eating, you know, bad food and having all this freeze dried stuff. And you just, if you've never been at 26,500, which nobody has unless you're actually going to climb Mount Everest, and en route stepping over dead bodies, it's just a whole different planet. And, you know, I learned these things, as you said, on the fly. I'd never been snowblind before. I got hit with that. I'd never worn an oxygen tank. That was all new. The you know, Denali, you're carrying your own gear. Now you got Sherpa. Most of them don't speak your language, which became a real obstacle with me and my Sherpa on that day when I was trying to say help. And he thought I was just having fun with them, right? So everything was different. You were right. I was wrong. But that's just, you know, like dumb arrogance, you know, going into thinking something that you can just power through based on your physical training that you've been doing. And it just, that helped and that counted. And I had to tap into all those jits at the end of the day. But boy, it was just an amazing experience, but just something I've never experienced before.
What was most difficult? Physical, mental, missing home. My biggest takeaway was when I was there, having to focus on one single thing and not deviate for over 2 months. That was the hardest thing for me, or the most challenging. What was it for you?
Well, most times, you know, a lot of these mountains, you may go up and come down a little bit, but you're kind of going up in one direction. And, you know, to do three or four rotations and then having this threat of COVID land in your camp, which everybody was freaked out about, and canceling everything, and people are flown off the mountain left and right, and having the cyclone, the weather, you know, Mother Nature has to cooperate. There's a number of people that got locked out and forced down. So they paid all this money. They were there full 2 months and they just caught in the wrong day in the wrong storm and didn't have a window and they had to go home. And now they have to think about, you know, am I going to go back and do it this next year and pay another big amount of money, right? And so I just think all the elements, you know, come into play and trying to navigate through those things. I wasn't really homesick as much. It was just more the, oh, now I got to go back through this ice wall again, man. I just don't want to do it, you know, because it's a round trip constantly up and down and up and down. It's hard.
What were your little voices in your head to keep you going through the ice fall up and down? Your kids, memories, what was your spiritual fuel?
I think the angels on my back certainly were, you know, my daughters. That was a big deal. I think my close friends, my relationships, I could really feel through all these different social posts, through Instagram and things like that, of just so much love flowing in my direction of support, and we're behind you and go get them and don't give up, right? And it really helped fuel me to the end when things got really tight, to not give up.
Right. So let's call it, if I can, post PTSD,
yeah,
recovering physically, mentally, looking back at that mountain, yeah, in your mind. If you can give us a couple of takeaways, what sits with you today that you know will never leave you? And that list is going to grow, but tell me about that list right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's as much about Everest. I was able to complete the seven. It took me 9 years to do it, but I think a lot of it is I go back to ground zero, which is the question you asked a bit ago about how did you get into climbing. And so some of the things that's really fed me is stepping into the fear, right, of doing something I didn't know really what I was doing. I had to learn a whole new game. It challenged me. It took me all over the world. I mean, just even the first time I flew down to Tanzania and you fly into Arusha, I'd never flown by myself before, like in that. I mean, I'd fly to LA by myself or something, but not like I'm going to the other side of the world and I don't know anybody and they got machine guns and, you know, all this stuff. And so I think that was a big learning for me as I sit here today. I think, you know, never underestimate what can be accomplished and achieved if you really put your mind to it. It really put me on a hardcore path of training. And again, going back to that blueprint of Don James of if you do all these different things in the pyramid, then things and great things can happen in your life. And I think, you know, I think the main difference between me as I look at my situation and maybe some others is just having that daily discipline. And so it's great to have big goals, but that can also be called a New Year's resolution. And a lot of times those are hatched in December and they're given up by March, right? I'm going to lose 10 pounds. And so, you know, I'm no different. I don't like to get out of bed all the time and put my feet on the floor and go and do it, but I know it's going to make me better. And there's never been one time when I've got on that bike or climbed up that mountain from a training thing, even though I didn't want to do it in front of it, and come off it saying, I wish I hadn't done that. Every time I'm in a better mood, and it's just like, it creates happiness and good things. And there's all these amazing benefits that come along.
I think that we have to give a shout out to your friend, Jimmy Mora.
Big time.
Jimmy Mora, great football coach, professional football coach, college football coach, a teammate of yours at the University of Washington. I joked with Jimmy the other day, didn't I, where he trained for every one of the seven summits, getting your ass out of bed and getting the feet on the floor and being a companion.
No.
How important was that with Jimmy? He didn't go to the seven summits, but he might as well have gone. He could have made it, I'm sure, with his fitness. And you guys did this together, right? As far as the prep.
We did. And you know, things got really tight there at the end, as you know. And, you know, I probably trained hard. Well, I know I did harder. I mean, I thought I trained hard for all these, but especially with COVID and it got pushed out a year ago, you know, I doubled down and went even twice the amount that I was doing before. And he was there for most of it. And to have that companion, that comrade, that guy that you can trust, all the stories. I mean, I've got more dirt on him and he has more dirt on me and it's in the vault, you know, and being able to have that trail talk and problems come up for both of us to be able to work it out and have that person that you can really trust and talk about those different things while at the same time getting all these benefits of being out in nature and climbing and pushing yourself. You know, it's been, for me, it's been another one of those blessings that's come along with, you know, the goal has been there, but, you know, to share it with somebody like that has been really special.
That's great. On that note, looking back on the whole seven summits, there's not a lot of people that have climbed the seven summits. Mm. 9 years, what a wonderful 9 years. You knew what you were doing for your vacation, right? You were going somewhere remote in the world. And these aren't big cities. You might have landed in a big city and then you take buses and trains and whatever to get out to the mountains. Mm-hmm. Looking back over the whole journey of the seven summits, what relationships and experiences stick out?
Well, I think it just pushes me, you know, of course, in every expedition I went on, I never went with a buddy because nobody wanted to go with me. And so I always went to every remote spot around the globe by myself. And I met these wonderful people. And I look back on that and, you know, just the relationships, the guides, the learning knowledge. You know, I went to Kilimanjaro. I climbed that twice. The second time I was with Chris Long, which is Howie Long's son. And he started this organization called Water Boys. So it really like got my head spinning towards philanthropy and giving back. We raised, Jimmy and I raised $47,000 to build our own water well. And the cool thing about that is because we had actually accomplished our raising enough money to fund a well, nobody else did, we dedicated that well to my dad. So his name is on a plaque on that well in that village in the Serengeti. Pretty cool. Yeah. And so going down there and many of these other remote places around the earth, you know, the people in Nepal hardly have anything. Certainly the people in Africa don't. And many of the Argentines, you know, it's not the kind of poverty in other places, but still the people there up in the mountain don't make much money. And it was almost like this inverse relationship of happiness compared to actual material things that they had in their life. And it's almost like the less they had, the more happier they were. I mean, in Tanzania, you know, they're not in the main cities, but out in the Serengeti, the people of the Maasai tribe, you know, they trade goats as their currency.
Right.
Like how many goats you got depends on how rich you are.
Right.
So just to understand that to me is just, it puts life in perspective of what's important and what's not.
It does. And I'm really pleased that you've had these experiences and talking about putting life in perspective. You've clearly carried that from 9 years of seeing the world, building relationships, seeing the tops of continents. Tell me about, you've carried that and you've carried it into really a focus and a commitment and a passion to higher ground.
Oh.
Tell us about higher ground and then let's talk about the 923 event.
Yeah. So again, going back to ground zero for me of giving back, and that really was triggered with Chris Long, and we just talked about that. And a couple of years ago, my daughter was mission critical, Amelia, in Arizona, and she was having some huge seizures, and which required hospitalization. And that led to me being in Tucson, Arizona. And when I was down there, I was just like, you know, why am I raising money for people in East Africa? It's important, but I need to help my daughter. I need to get behind it. And so I've had a couple of campaigns, Amelia's Everest, and then we did Amelia's Everest, the Losi Challenge. And so we've raised, gosh, over $56,000, $57,000 for people with cognitive and adaptive issues. And so I partner with Higher Ground. I don't have my own nonprofit. I go through Higher Ground. And so it's a sub vertical of what they do there. And the wonderful thing about Higher Ground that mostly helps these adaptive athletes that are ex-military people, but it's very inclusive. And they bring people in here to some valley. So it's not just about giving to the Red Cross or something and your money goes to Haiti and you never see it again, which is all very important. But because we're surrounded in some valley, Idaho, with all these natural resources from a river you can fish in, you can float, you can ski down, you can mountain bike, you can do all these different things. The whole key is through activity builds empowerment and confidence, which helps people move on and empower them to do something great. And I really believe that by Amelia being the poster child of these campaigns that we've done with the NFL, with the Las Vegas Raiders, with many other generous donors gifting, for her getting in front of these different audiences at different times and giving these small speeches, it's really given her wings to fly high. And that's in part one of the reasons why she's been seizure-free for the last 7 months.
That's awesome. Yeah, I as you know, I'm working with you a little bit on a project for Higher Ground, and just looking, they talk about helping people become their best selves and helping people with some form of disability feel normal, yeah, and happy and accomplished. And that's great. Tell me about September 23 and the program you're bringing right here to Ketchum, Idaho.
Yeah. So again, back to Forrest Gump, life's like a box of chocolates. And one of those chocolates happened back in January, February, where I got a call from the NFL and they said, you know, we've seen your story on social and we're very interested in doing a film on it. And so the film originally was supposed to start, it's going to be a 5 to 7 minute, you know, kind of quick hit thing. And then we started to get into it. They flew out to Sun Valley and said, okay, we've decided this is going to be between 12 and 15 minutes. They interviewed Jim Mora. They interviewed Ed Viesters. They got some other people on camera. They're here filming. And they said, now we're going to now go from 22 to 25 minutes. And the last word, I was just in LA finishing some scenes. It's a 28 minute full feature, you know, for them, which right, they don't do much of in terms of that kind of length. So over the moon blast, and I haven't seen it, but we are going to have the premiere on this 23rd of September at the Argyris Theater. Tickets will go on sale. We're really excited about, you're going to serve as the MC, and we're blessed because of your knowledge. We're going to have everybody that was in the film. I talked to Garrett today. Sounds like he's going to be here. Hugh Millen, Ed Viesters, Jim Moore, my daughters. The director is flying out, Ryan Travis. He'll be part of the panel. We also have a guy named Steve Azar. He's a friend. He's had maybe 5 or 6 top 10 hits. He's written for others. He's performed with Garth Brooks and Kenny Chesney and all these guys, and he's wonderful. So we're going to do a little bit of MTV Unplugged to open up the night. So it's going to be amazing thing, not just on me, but just on, you know, what can happen. And I think a lot of the focus of the film is about the power of drive and helping others in terms of what my daughter did for me in terms of making sure that I got off that mountain safely.
And it's going to be a great night. And it's all designed to benefit Higher Ground so that they can do their thing. But it's also a manifestation that you are still climbing. You're yeah, still moving. And that brings me to my final segment, my final question.
Yeah.
The name of this podcast that I'm so honored to be a guest host is Finding Your Summit. I would suggest you haven't found yours because you're still alive.
Yeah.
And none of us have found our summit. Isn't yeah, that something that is fluid and ongoing? You've seen the top of the world. You stepped on top. You climbed there. What's your next summit? What's in your mind? You've talked a lot about it tonight, but as you work through all these projects, what's in the back of your mind that is talking to you as your next thing?
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of being challenged and I'm considering going down to Ecuador at the end of the year and climbing Cotopaxi. I'm not sure if that's a Band-Aid or if that's going to happen, but there's a book that could be in the works that some people out of Nashville are talking to me about and things like that in this movie, and we'll see where that goes. But, you know, I think one of the things that I'm doing as I emerge out of this experience on Mount Everest is I'm still working out twice a day, and I'm doing that because I want to stay ready. And as I do that, you know, I'm going to be churning on new ideas and how do I get better and how can I help others and how can I push any attention that comes towards me towards higher ground and being more involved in that. In terms of like, what are the next seven summits? It's a great question. You know, I've tossed the idea around of trying to tag the highest mountain in every state. It turns out that I've actually done four of the hardest ones. You've probably done three or four of those, but I've done four, which are Denali, Rainier, Whitney, and Bora here in Idaho. And so it's kind of downhill from here, right? But it's a wonderful way to see the U.S. And how often do you just get in a car and start driving to, you know, North Dakota or someplace? And some of it will be a toe tap, right? It's nothing that, but it's a goal, right? And to say that I've actually done all 50 of these is pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's not a Band-Aid. Continuing to do these things. And you said it, what a great way to see the country. Climbing the seven summits was a great way to see the world.
Yeah.
And these are great ways to see these areas. Again, I'll say it's not in the city center. It's getting out in the hills and meeting some really interesting people. So I encourage you to go to Ecuador. Those are great volcanoes.
Yeah.
There's great climbing around the world that aren't just part of the seven summits. And climbing will always remain that great metaphor for everything we try to do.
Yeah.
Mark, I'm probably not going to be a guest host again with you as my guest. So is there anything else you'd like to say before I say goodnight to this nice audience?
Yeah, no, look, I've fully appreciated. It's not very often where the mics get turned around and they come in my direction. And for that, I'm grateful. And your questions were amazing and insightful. And I like your thought process on everything. And, you know, look, if anybody, I've always said this and I'll say it again, but you know, I'm very responsive on social, and if people need help or advice or what I went through, I mean, I put on my pants just like everybody else. And I know you do the same thing. And so, offering to be the hosts of this podcast, guest host for this particular, episode of Finding Your Summit, it's been a nice break for me just to sit back and let the questions come to me for a change.
Right on. You did a great job. I learned some new things about you, and I hope everybody else did too.
All right. There he is, the one, the only Mark Madison. All done. Thank you. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.